RadioInfluence.com.
Good morning, everyone. I mean, afternoon.
It is morning now.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Frankie Val on the drums.
That's Friday.
It's every day. I'm always a drummer.
I know. You know. Yes, I know. I was going to say...
Nothing's happened. It's cloudy outside. I was stormy weather Val not too long ago. So I can't, you know, just... You go back to the fail safe.
It's nice here. It's nice here. You got to get out a little more. It's been horrible in New York this year.
It has. And in fact, for the next 5 days, I think like every other day is going to be thunderstorms, overcast. And as long as the humidity doesn't come with it, but you know that's coming because we're creeping up on July now.
It's crazy.
I know.
God.
Before you know it, we're going to be talking about Halloween again. Then I'll really be happy.
Can I just start the show with something that I just, I'm getting a couple, let's just get like the frustrating things off our chest.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, why is it that they like on some, on my brand of toilet paper anyway, they like glue down the first sheet to the rest of the roll?
Honestly, I don't know. No, I have noticed it, but usually the rolls are so thick now that what I do is I just find the perforated line and I just break it apart at that point and just peel off one full layer until the gluey part is gone.
It's so annoying. I'm like sitting there like spinning the damn thing like it's like a, you know, like a paint roller or something.
Yeah, because sometimes you only get the first of two plies off.
Right.
Yeah, it's annoying.
I mean, just stop it. You guys wrap the damn roll. Why do you need to glue it? I don't understand.
It's so stupid.
Exactly. That's number one. Number two thing that's pissing me off just a little bit today. Can we please stop taking a tweet and writing an article about it and not adding anything to the conversation? Like, I don't need an outlet to write an article about someone's tweet when I can just use Twitter. I don't understand this. It's got some clickbaity headline, and then you go to the article, and it's literally so-and-so said this, they said this, and then they talk about what they said, and they don't add anything new, and then that's the article.
Well, that is just a symptom. I talk about this all the time. A lot of people do. It's a symptom of where what kind of a time we're living in as far as the needs to how you need to feed the beast. If we are constantly plugged into a digital medium all day long, you need headlines to be fresh every couple of hours. So this is what becomes news.
Well, you know, fine. I understand the newsworthiness of something, but give your reader something else. This is literally a clickbait money-making scheme is what it is, Frank.
Yes.
On behalf of these.
And when I say this is what becomes news, it's not because the thing that they're talking about is necessarily newsworthy. It's just that they need something to publish. If their blog rolls are stale, if they're not updating every two, it's all about visibility. That's all it is.
I'm going to break that mold. I'm going to say I think people are craving content more than frequency.
Absolutely. Corey Diggs. Corey, yeah. for example, you know, I like bringing her up. She'll put out a piece once a week, every couple of days, and I'm always excited to see it because, you know, it's just like, all right, well, because then the news becomes like the toilet paper that you're using.
You know, Corey does such good work. She really does. She's really talented. I have a hard time finding, like with what I'm doing, enough time to really give her the credit, like my time. Like, you know what I mean? She really, her reports need focus and concentration to read.
Yep.
And that's exactly what journalism should be. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Like, you need to be taking some time to actually, you know, understand why this is important and look at the information that's provided. You're right. But that it's just a stupid clickbait headlines. I'm so done. And half the time they're not even like guiding the readers in the right place. For a prime example, I just tweeted this, Frank. Now, we did a joke the other day, and it's almost like Rush Limbaugh listens to our show because you started reading the Drudge headlines. Very funny, right?
I was actually going to start off today with reading the Drudge headlines.
Well, it's funny that you say that. Why don't you read some of those headlines for us, and then I'm going to tell you what I tweeted.
Okay, let's go right to the Sludge Report right now. Here's what is on the front page, okay? I'm just going to go to the top from the headline up, okay? Trump to launch campaign that never really ended. Re-election machine flipping the script. Now they go here. They're firing pollsters, battleground. Both parties prepared for a fight. But here's the big one. Pete is in the money. And then Fox News polls shock. A poll shock. Bernie leads Trump by 9 with an exclamation point. With an exclamation point.
Not only that, but internal leaks shake the White House.
Oh, my God. And then of course, CBS. Biden dominates battleground.
Dominates them. The you know what's happening in those states. He's dominating because people are leaving the sleep aid market. And they're jumping right into what's his name? Biden? Biden rallies.
Yeah.
If you look at the right-hand side, Frank, you see that first one. It says manufacturing index post largest ever drop into negative territory.
Yeah.
You're reading through the Drudge report. You see that. What is your first thought?
Well, when you see manufacturing largest ever drop into negative, your first thought is, wow, Donald Trump stands by manufacturing jobs and bringing things home to the United States and all that stuff. And looks like he's not getting the job done.
Do me a favor. Click on that for me, will you?
You got it. I'm doing that right now. Okay, now what?
Read the headline.
Empire State Manufacturing Index posts largest ever drop into negative territory in June. Oh, my God. What? New York is not doing well? Oh, boy. How did that happen?
Listen, this is what I'm saying. Somebody's like, oh, he's a news aggregator. I'm like, this is a propaganda website now. If you're going to skew a headline that badly to try and make a casual reader believe that what they're looking at means the entire country's manufacturing index posts the largest drop, while you're putting headlines about how Biden dominates and Bernie leads and there's internal leaks and Trump's to launch a campaign that never really ended, what do you think is driving if you're changing headlines?
No, I get you there. It's very obvious what's driving it all. It's very obvious what's driving it all. And this is the thing that it took me a long time to catch on. I thought that Drudge Report was, you know, one of those news aggregators that was almost like a safe zone.
Right. For,
you know, but then I realized, whoa, I don't know whose bag he's in or why this is being done, but it's very deliberate. It's not even like the news is being curated in a way that it is it's being clustered together to form a narrative. No, even the headlines are being manipulated.
Yep.
What is about that?
It's propaganda.
Well, you know what you're talking about before. When we were talking about Corey a little bit, is just that journalism. It's really just gotten such a shot. Such a dagger right through the heart as far as it becoming a real science. There was a science to journalism that made it almost, you know, untouchable for me to even think about it, because there is a scientific way of presenting research and verifying facts and how to formulate the actual story that you're trying to craft there to bring to people so that they can digest it and then go off and form their own opinions. That is, there's nothing scientific about what we're seeing here. It has become drama club. It's just drama club in high school. You have a script that you want to bring to life and you go out and you manufacture it. There really is, grammar is not even that good. It's one long screed.
It's horrible. Like sometimes I'll read the first sentence of an article and it goes on for like 20 minutes. I'm like, I can't even, if I were to try to say this out loud, I would need 4 breaths. And sometimes they don't even end correctly. Like they're half sent. It's just sick. Anyway, real journalism coming. Just saying.
Good.
Yeah. So that's just a couple of the things that started frustrating me today, Frank. And moving from there, I want to talk about, before we get into some other stuff. Oh, you know what? Let's do this first. I just read this thread by Kyle Kashev that Harvard rescinded his acceptance.
Who's Kyle Kashev?
He's the conservative Parkland survivor.
And he got accepted to Harvard, but now they're saying we don't want you.
Yes.
Why?
Remember a couple weeks ago, he was made aware of like he got called out on those like racist comments and texts he had when he was 16, like before the Parkland shooting.
Oh, no, I didn't catch on to this.
They were bad. I mean, they were bad, like, but they weren't bad, you know, like nobody in the world could ever say something so horrible. They were just 16-year-old misguided text messages with his friends that some people leaked because they don't like him, right? This is why it just makes me sick. Anyway, he was attacked viciously. He was viciously attacked. He was, you know, he capitulated and wrote an apology, and he felt really bad and whatever. And then the media went after him like crazy. And then Harvard wrote to him asking him to basically explain what this was all about. He wrote an apology letter and said he was sorry. And then they all of a sudden decided, you know what? Screw you. It's too late for you to find a new college to go to. We're not letting you come here anymore. And you can scratch. He gave up like other scholarships and stuff to be able to go to Harvard. Meanwhile, so is what's his name? David Hogg. He's going to Harvard, I believe. They're fine with him.
And that kid's a dumbass.
He's not even smart. Exactly. Yeah,
he's not even smart. That kid, it's like he looks like a talking stick insect. And he's just, he's embarrassing whenever he opens his mouth.
Listen, I don't agree with a lot of what Kyle says. And he's a kid. He's still a kid. Okay. So I don't agree with him, but on a lot. But I also don't feel like he should be, because of some text messages he sent that they would never have known about if he didn't get thrust into the spotlight as a high profile figure, rescind his admission to the school if he's qualified to be going to the school. And he even brings up the point that even Harvard throughout history has included slave owners, the faculty, segregationists, biggest anti-Semites. If Harvard is suggesting that growth isn't possible and our past defines our future, then Harvard is an inherently racist institution.
Well, the college system is racist now.
Yes.
So.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And he goes, but I don't believe that. No, but you should.
You should. You're living it now.
Yeah. And I said, if there's anything that I can offer you, Kyle, it's to listen to Friday's episode of the Dark to Light podcast. Because we talked about college. I said, you don't need them. They need you. Like, figure out. You've got, you know, a huge social media following. You have a brand now for yourself. He's got three times the followers as I do. He sat and met with the president of the United States.
Start a podcast.
Do something with yourself. Be an entrepreneur.
In a couple of years. Spend 3 years, 3 or 5 years just reading. And then go put it all together.
Yeah. Dude, this is like a gift to you.
I was covering on last Thursday's show. I circled back around to affirmative action. Because in New York, we've got a hell of a lot of problems, obviously. And you know, Bill de Blasio, he went after schools, public schools in New York City that are, you know, very high up the list as far as their quality and their exclusivity. And he went after Stuyvesant School because there was only 7 black students in the school, which good for them. You know, because this is, but the problem is that it's like most of the students in that school are Asian.
Yeah, no, so, and the Asian community is getting really upset with him.
Yeah, because you're saying now things are just too Asian. And once again, quality, quantity, trying to make the world the way that you want it. And then they don't even see how it ruins it for everybody. So there's that. Then, of course, there is also the greater New York issue where they have gotten rid of the literacy tests for teachers because they weren't seeing enough teachers of certain minority groups passing. And it was more important that students were able to be taught by teachers that look like them than teachers who can pass a literacy test.
I don't even know how to respond to that, so I'm just not going to, because the expletives, is that a word?
Yeah.
I mean, literacy just teachers.
And think about that. think about that just for a second there too, because even if you are constantly thinking about how you can bridge the gap and between races and all that other stuff, wouldn't you want to have qualified teachers mixed, integrating into schools and just so that kids have great experiences with people from
not at the sacrifice of racial.
Everything is segregation.
Social justice, Frank. Social justice.
Well, they already said in the end times, good will be bad, bad will be good. Well, right now we have integration is segregation. That is the scariest part about all this. Everybody who's talking about ending racism is actually working to ensconce it. God. Yes.
So let's shift gears a little bit to a story I did on Friday. I'm going to tell it to you as though you've never heard it before. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I lost you for a second. It was very quiet.
I'm here.
All right. So I was looking into the Kellyanne Conway Hatch Act firing recommendation, and I'm like, I want to see how many other people have ever been recommended for termination on the basis of a Hatch Act violation. I just wanted to do a comparison because the way the letters were written about it and everything were really partisan. Like, it sounded like the Office of Special Counsel, which is the office that takes care of Hatch Act and whistleblower and a couple of other, you know, workplace discrimination and targeting and stuff like that. It sounded like they had a real axe to grind against Kellyanne Conway. Now, I'm reading through her violations and I'm like, you know what? These are kind of violations of the Hatch Act.
I didn't even know. I don't know anything about it.
You know, They're borderline, like, if you really wanted to take it to a certain degree, you could argue that they had a few good examples of what would be a violation. But the way that they wrote this and the reasons why they did and the lack of a, you know, the double standard in enforcement of it, like, they don't prosecute anyone else. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't even need to know what the hell is going on with this particular thing to know that there's double standards in this. Hatch Act, Logan Act, foreign agent law, you know, FARA, everything that we're talking about in Washington, D.C. It's just everybody is kind of living in this gray area of illegality. And it really just comes down to what needs to be pushed and what needs to be, protected in some cases. And that's what the laws are used for. It is all subjective. And it's no good.
No, it's dual justice, what's it called? Two-tiered justice.
Kind of, but we're not even talking about the civilians now. We're talking about a roving group of power brokers who live among us, that they don't even get a consistent form of justice too, depending on which ones of them are unreliable members of the herd. Everybody else is going to just, you know, flippantly use whatever statutes they want to try to bring down pressure on them, even though they're all committing the same crimes.
Well, what I found, yeah, I know one person doesn't get any. Ugh, God, I don't want to think about it. What I found, Frank, is going to probably make your skin crawl a little bit, because I started looking back. They have these public files. So whenever they do an agency like investigate, it's almost like an IG sort of an agency in a way. They work a lot with the inspector generals, but they have to they publish these papers and the reports and the evidence and stuff of what they find. So I'm looking through 2012, 13, 14, 15. I'm on 2013 and I see this report listed here for it's for the DOJ and I'm sorry, the FBI at Quantico. And am I saying that correctly? I believe it was. Anyway, it was DOJ/FBI. Yeah, here it is. Washington, D.C., Quantico, Virginia, Winchester, Virginia. And I'm like, that's interesting. Let me see what they were looking into then. So I start reading. It's about this whistleblower named Scott McDonald, okay? Scott McDonald was a, like, very skilled accountant in the Yellow Book kind of methodology. And it's a very useful sort of a way to make sure that everything is being taken care of evidence-wise and things like that. And organizationally in terms of cataloging evidence and things. So the FBI brings him in And they have him. They say, we want you to look into our electronic surveillance and resource management programs and just make sure that we're doing the right job and how we keep track of evidence and how we keep track of, you know, and we want you to prepare like annual wiretap reports for us, et cetera, so on and so forth. This is under Robert Mueller. Just let's remember this, okay?
Okay.
He comes in. He starts looking around. He identifies the questions that he's going to ask for his audit. And immediately, he hits a brick wall. They're saying, we don't want you to be able to ask the questions. And if we don't like any of these questions, we're not going to answer them. And he's like, well, you really can't do that when you've hired me to come in here and audit you to figure out what's going on. You know, you're going to have to answer these questions. He's poking around. He does his investigation. What he finds is absolutely terrifying. He finds that none of the Title III or electronic surveillance warrants are being cataloged correctly, and evidence is not being cataloged correctly. So, in other words, when you go in to do, when you go before a judge to present a warrant, to get a warrant on someone, whether it's a FISA warrant, which was included in this, or it was just a regular like phone tap warrant or something, you need to tell the judge whether or not that person has ever been under one of those warrants before. With this database working the way it was, the agents doing these requests were not getting accurate information back, which makes the foundation for all of the warrants they requested completely illegal.
Jeez.
So not only in that, but there were 90,000 pieces of evidence uncatalogued in the New York field office alone. They were bulk categorizing or cataloging evidence. So they'd put everything in a box. Let's say it's a glove, you know, whatever. I'm making suggestions here. I don't mean that this is what it was, but like a glove, a hat, a piece of, you know, a piece of clothing, even the 9/11 evidence that they had, Frank, they threw it into a box altogether and cataloged just the one box, not the actual stuff that's in there. So there's literally no record of evidence the way it's supposed to be.
And that's just in New York.
That was just New York, the 90,000 pieces. In another thing, he found that these guys were, this retired agent had taken two pieces of evidence out with him and kept it and never brought it back. Just think about this.
Like a good luck charm.
This is the FBI. Now, the Title III stuff gets even more egregious than that, and it gets complicated. But the you know, the way that these it extended to how they keep track of their text messages in the FBI, their emails. This guy found that the people leaving the FBI, rather than the FBI automatically like cataloging all of this email as it comes in and saying this is important, this is important, this is important, there was no system in place to do that. So when an FBI agent left the bureau, they would be like, okay, here, put this in the catalog, and leave out whatever they wanted. And not only that, but that skirts FOIA. So when someone makes a FOIA request for something and the agents themselves and the people high up in the FBI are forced to go ahead and tell them what's important and what's not, think about what skirts FOIA. It's really scary. This guy got fired. And he went to the Office of Special Counsel and said, I'm a whistleblower. This is what's going on. It needs to be fixed. He had 14 high-level witnesses, all from the Bureau, one 40-year veteran of the Bureau, to testify on his behalf. The Special Counsel goes and says we need an investigation into this. Guess who they task? They task the Inspections Division of the FBI to investigate the FBI.
Oh, we've investigated ourselves and we found no wrongdoing.
That's exactly what happened. They refused to ask certain questions. They basically threatened that they would drop the investigation altogether if certain things were explored. They put their report in basically saying, Scott McDonald is crazy, has no idea what he's talking about, wouldn't be in a position to know any of this, and so he's out of his mind. Well, he had gotten a copy of that report and wrote a rebuttal to it. It's 86 pages, this rebuttal. I've read every page. It is chock full of details, and this is why you didn't find it, because you didn't look here, and you didn't look here on purpose. He said this, I truly believe, let me just quote him really quickly. Hold on. It is my perception and that of many others. The inspection division is a highly political division within the FBI. Special agents and supervisory special agents are selected for volunteer for these positions to advance their careers and must prove themselves as team players. It is difficult for me to envision an investigation of my concerns performed by these inspectors would be free of bias.
Oh.
Anyway, I hope I didn't bore you with that big, long story.
No,
but
no. You know what gets to me is that when you cover stories like this, people will always say we have to handle these kinds of situations with great sensitivity because there's so much information there that needs to be protected because it's sensitive and this and that. And I say to myself, you know, well, if we knew. The only reason why all this is so damaging to us is because it's been so long since we've been told the truth that in reality, behind closed doors, the reality of things is so stark from the ridiculous version of reality we've been given to abide by that now it would be like a complete hysterical moment if we knew everything.
Can you imagine? I know. This, let me tell you, you're absolutely right because this came out in, again, 2013, right? Nobody reported on it. Not a peep anywhere on this. This was like buried under a bridge somewhere, never to be heard from again. So while I'm doing my research, I came across this Vimeo video of this gentleman, Scott McDonald, giving a presentation to a bunch of human resource executives about why whistleblowers are important to their organizations and how they can be used to help fix problems inherent within corporate environments, right? So I did my Twitter thread and I said, you know, hey, Scott, if you're out there somewhere, I'd really love to talk to you. And sure enough, I am having a call with Scott today.
Awesome.
Yeah. So.
So are you going to is that going to be turned into a video? Is it going to be the basis of an article you're writing? What's going to come of that call?
Well, I'm hoping that I can have him come on the podcast with us.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And if not, I can, you know, I have both sides of the story right now, but from different perspectives. I have the government side of the story. I have Scott's side of the story. I want to talk to him. And who knows? Maybe I talk to him for an hour and I'm like, I don't know about this. You know what I mean? Who knows? Yeah. But I definitely want to talk to him and see what happened and get some more detail. And write a report on it because I feel like this is super important to what's going on today. There was FISA abuse back then. And uncovering this stuff, Frank, to your point that you made a minute ago, think about all of the cases. Think about the harm this would do to the FBI in terms of prosecutions, in terms of convictions they've received, if their evidence or if their warrants were obtained after federal investigators basically lied to judges to get them.
Think about it now, even though Paul Manafort is serving time for things he actually did, think about how many Paul Manaforts are in prison right now.
Right. Think about how many people, even if they were guilty of a crime.
They were opened up, people just knew, and probably because people who are just as prone to criminality knew that this person needs to be taken out. Let's just take out a warrant. Oh, we'll find some dirt. There it is. Goodbye.
Exactly. That and the fact that the process isn't being followed too, Frank. So, like, let's say you are guilty of a crime, right? But they didn't. The only reason why they figured it out was because they illegally obtained a warrant on you. That goes against everything we have in the Constitution.
It's the method of assassinating. It's pretty much a political assassination without having to get your hands dirty and actually kill a person.
Right.
That's just so it, you know, you can go back to the old stories of covert intelligence hitmen. You could talk about hitmen and you could talk about, you know, lethal injections in the dead of night, nobody knows, or whatever the hell, heart attack guns. And then there's this. You know, what fate is worse? I don't know. Languishing in a prison.
Goodness only knows. But anyway, that's my story. That's my story.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big one for me on Friday. I couldn't believe it. In addition to that, too, I'll keep you posted, obviously, Frank, and everyone. In addition to that, you know what we got?
What?
I'm just waiting on the permission. I showed it to you. We saw the dark to light Frank and Beans soapbox cars.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't that awesome?
It was awesome enough to just see the logo on two soapbox cars, but then to see our names on either one, I was like, what?
I know.
Oh, man.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I hope they win.
Me too.
I hope they both win the tie, of course. Not one is bad.
Frank, you'll win because I'm just the topping.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well, that'll be good. They can always cheat. Like John Candy did in that movie Cool Runnings. You remember? So John Candy's character in Cool Runnings, the Jamaican bobsled team.
Oh my God.
He was the coach for the bobsled team, and he's like disgraced by the Olympic Committee because back in the day he put weights at the bottom of his bobsled to make him go faster. We should tell these kids, listen, remember, winning is everything. Get some dumbbells at the bottom. We need this, kids.
We need to win.
We need this.
That'll be our legacy.
Yeah, that's it.
Soapbox kids cheat at direction of podcast hosts.
And imagine, but think about that. What kind of would that bring us? Would that bring us how many more listens? You think people would show up just to see what are these? These are the guys who rigged the soapbox race.
We're just learning from our God Emperor Trump.
That's it. The rigging. Only ours would be real.
I know. God Emperor. I love when people say that.
So hey, you know, before we move on to the next thing, I was out with Lauren on yesterday morning just to grab some coffee and stuff like that before we went and started hanging out with the fathers. And I saw an opened New York Post.
Yes.
An open New York Post right on Brandon's page. I said, what? I said, Lauren, look, it's Brandon. And there he is with that shit-eating grin on his face. And I thought, this is great. Shamed by pride. LGBT center sued by GOP guy.
Isn't that funny the way they said that? I thought that was funny. I knew that there was going to be a piece in the Post. I just didn't know what they were writing about.
Oh, yeah. It's page 12 and it's a full page.
Yeah, he has a good picture in there, too. I'm waiting for this suit to hit Pacer because, of course, I could ask him for it, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it the same way that I have always done all of my work on things like this. And I'm going to research the case the good old fashioned way.
Cool.
I don't see it yet.
No, that was quite a thrill for me.
Yeah.
Quite it is, a thrill.
I mean, I can only imagine walking through the streets of New York and then there's Brandon just right there.
Well, I heard about the Brandon, whenever he's told his story, he brings up the disabled reporter lie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how actually seeing that it was not the way it was portrayed was a major ice-breaking moment. But this is the first time that I saw any kind of coverage on the whole Rachel Maddow tax returns thing, which I'm so happy that because if it happened to Brandon, that had to have been at least a watershed moment for some people.
Oh, yeah.
He said, here's a quote. He said that year – so I guess last year or whatever, Rachel Maddow said on Twitter that she had President Trump's tax returns, a smoking gun, and to tune in that night. I said to myself, okay, if she really has the smoking gun against Trump, I'll forget about all the negative feelings I have about the liberal media and Democratic Party. Finally, at the end of her show, she produced two pieces of paper from 2005 that showed he paid his taxes. That was a moment I decided I'm no longer a liberal or a Democrat. That was the final straw for me. And not only did he pay his taxes, he paid more taxes than Rachel Maddow's own network did.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Like, we played that clip of him that day when he was still a liberal right after the election saying he knew then. He knew. He was saying, we did this. You remember that clip that we played?
Yeah.
It was poignant. And it goes towards that. Even though it doesn't appear so, like, it's hard to explain what I'm trying to say. And that's not good on a podcast, Frank.
No, you did fine.
That's not good on a podcast.
You did just fine.
You do better. You know, I really strive to be as articulate as you. Like, you have just this way of explaining things. I got this great compliment about you today, Frank. Can I share it with people before we go on?
Fine. All right, no, I'm okay. I'll take this in stride. Go ahead.
In stride?
Yes. Let's go.
I'm looking for it. I'm just looking for it slowly just to ruin it for you.
You know what it is? It's just all movies. I watched a lot of movies.
No. This person under your tweet, which has 226 retweets now, by the way.
Which one?
The U.S. minority one we're talking about.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Ted Baxter says, thank you, Tracy Beans, for introducing me to Frank. He's as awesome as you.
Oh, that's great.
And I said, aren't I so lucky? I'm glad you enjoy that which is Frank as much as I do. And I thank you for the compliment.
I did see that one. Okay, well, that's nice. See, I like that.
Compliments aren't always nice. That's the point of them. But what?
No. Compliments, some are good. And then I think others can be a little harmful. Because then I have to spend the rest of the day forgetting that I heard it.
Why?
So I can get back to thinking that I am deficient and I have to overcome a deficiency. And then it makes me want to do better and form a better way of articulating an idea. It makes me lazy.
I have a hard time believing that you would settle for mediocrity.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Even if you were complicated, complimented.
I am very complicated.
I know you are. That's why we're having this conversation right now. Most people would be like, wow, people like me. That's great. And move on. But you.
I know. I like that. I do.
I think you should really learn to accept, like get out of that little space that you're in, because people really like you and you should take those compliments so you know what's going well, and then you can improve on the stuff that people don't mention.
That's why I like with feedback. I love when people tell me what they like. hey, I like that. That bit was great. Oh, I laughed so hard with this. That's what I want to do more of. What hits off. There's nothing worse than saying, oh, you know what? This really fell flat for me. Like, okay, you know what? I didn't need to know that. Okay.
You know what's funny? I love, there were like maybe once or twice in your like career that I've been listening to you where you've like literally taken to the microphone to curse out your audience.
When was that? I'm very, very careful.
Somebody came at you about something you were talking about, and please forgive me because I don't remember the topic. It was something you covered that people just didn't appreciate the way you covered it. Like you took a lot of crap for it. Because you said something that was, quote, unpopular, and you've also been attacked for cursing, and that you go after people for, too, which
yes,
I think is funny.
Okay, so then you know what? There's two things that I can think of, and one of them is I get a lot of, you know, I can't show this to anybody. You curse too much. Mm-hmm. And I say, oh, well, you sound like a fucking liberal now. you're telling me I can't. Newsflash, everybody. Conservatives curse. Conservatives have really weird kinks in the bedroom. Conservatives, they smoke weed. Conservatives do a lot of things. Aren't we trying to break down this whole you can't say that mentality? Number one, you know, just use discretion if you're going to watch this in a family setting. That's number one. That's why I put up a disclaimer. That's why I try to address. But the other thing, the second thing that I got a little crap for was it wasn't necessarily, and you and I actually had a little differing opinion on this too, but when we're talking about all those tweets that were getting analyzed about a year and a half ago, James Gunn, the pedophilia stuff.
Oh, yes.
On Twitter.
Yes.
Obviously
that was it.
Not in any way, shape, or form defending pedophilia at all. I was trying to separate the subject matter from the notion of going into a person's written past, or especially somebody trying to make attempting to make what they believe to be a joke years ago as a way to destroy them in the present. I was talking about that methodology as being a very slippery slope. And of course, it's very hard because of how emotionally charged everybody is about preserving and protecting children and our most vulnerable elements of society. It was very hard for people to actually separate the subject matter of these particular tweets and the methodology of attacking people politically for attempts at jokes. because I, I'm.
But I appreciated the way you handled it, even though I still don't agree with you.
I did.
I appreciated it. Like, I loved that you were strong on what you believed in and you didn't back down even when you had a bunch of people really rudely being very nasty to you. And you defended your position with fervor and you were strong about it. And not only that, but like, I just wish you would be as passionate about that as you are about when people compliment you, which happens so often. And I just think that you should, I just want you to take the compliments better.
Well, okay. I'll work on that.
You can move off the couch now. Your time is up.
Okay, great. I'm off.
All right. What are you, leafing through your medical file now?
I'm leafing through the New York Post. I just turned the page from Brandon's page. I actually have the physical paper. You know what, Tracy, I got to say, I really love leafing through a newspaper, and I love the smell of the newspaper. I used to love sitting with my grandfather every morning as he would lick his thumb and turn the page, and we would look at the standings to see how the Yankees are doing or how, you know, his Jets were doing. And I just love the paper. It's too bad that it's all usually a, you know, commie rag now.
Yeah, I used to like the comments, the comic section in the Sunday Newsday.
Yeah,
I used to grab that. I let's make this an ASMR podcast for a second. Flip the pages next to the microphone.
Oh, this is probably the only kind of ASMR I can take. I can take page flipping. I cannot take anybody's mouth sounds. I cannot take tapping on glass bottles. I can't stand it. No, that's not that bad because that's it's not
plastic.
That's not that bad because it's not quiet and gentle enough. It's a little bit more. No.
Okay. I want to do an exercise with you.
Go ahead.
I'm going to hold on.
Okay.
Okay. So this is what we're going to do. There was a great hypothetical thread that came out. It's got 1,500 retweets. I found it when it had 90. Let's just put it that way. It's by an account called Incarnated_ET, who spoke to an actual defense attorney. And just they had a hypothetical conversation about what it would look like at a hearing in front of a judge in the Roger Stone case. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to be the defense attorney and you're going to be the FBI agent, John Smith.
Cool.
And we're going to go through this thread and play it out as though we're in court.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith. Okay. Okay. So I'm John Smith. Okay.
You're John Jacob. Yes.
Okay. All right, so
Agent Smith, you testified that the Russians hacked the DNC computers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Upon what information did you base your testimony?
Information found in reports analyzing the breach of the computers.
Ah, so the FBI prepared these reports.
No, a cybersecurity contractor with the FBI.
Okay, pardon me. Why would a contractor be preparing these reports? Do these contractors run the FBI laboratories where the server was examined?
No.
No? No what? These contractors don't run the FBI laboratories?
No, the laboratories are staffed by FBI personnel.
Well, I don't understand. Why would contractors be writing reports about computers that are forensically examined in FBI laboratories?
Well, the servers were not examined in the FBI laboratory.
Oh, so the FBI examined the servers on site to determine who had hacked them and what was taken?
No.
They didn't examine them on site?
No.
Well, where did they examine them?
Well, the FBI did not examine them.
What?
The FBI did not directly examine the servers?
Agent Smith, the FBI has presented to the grand jury and to this court and sworn as fact that the Russians hacked DNC computers. You are basing your sworn testimony on a report given to you by a contractor while the FBI has never actually examined the hardware?
That is correct.
Agent Smith, who prepared the analysis reports that the FBI relied on to give this sworn testimony?
CrowdStrike Incorporated, of course.
So which CrowdStrike employee gave you the report?
Well, we didn't receive the report directly from CrowdStrike.
What?
We did not receive the report directly from CrowdStrike.
Well, where did you find this report then?
It was given to us by the people who hired CrowdStrike to examine and secure their computer network and hardware.
Oh, so the report was given to you by the technical employees for the company that hired CrowdStrike to examine their servers?
No.
Well, then who gave you the report?
Legal counsel for the company that hired CrowdStrike.
Why would legal counsel be the ones giving you the report?
That I don't know.
Well, what company hired CrowdStrike then?
The Democratic National Committee.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You are giving sworn testimony to this court that Russia hacked the servers of the Democratic National Committee, and you were basing that testimony on a report given to you by the lawyers for the Democratic National Committee. And you, the FBI, never actually saw or examined the computer servers.
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you provide a copy of the technical report produced by CrowdStrike for the DNC?
No, I cannot.
Can you go back to your office and get a copy of the report?
No.
Are you locked out of your office?
No.
I don't understand. Why can you not provide a copy of this report?
Because I do not have a copy of the report, ma'am.
Did you lose it?
No.
Why do you not have a copy of the report?
Oh, because we were never given a copy, a final copy of the report.
Agent Smith, if you didn't get a copy of the report, upon what information are you basing your testimony?
On a draft of a copy of the report.
On a draft copy?
Yes, draft copy.
Was a final report ever delivered to the FBI?
No, ma'am.
Agent Smith, did you get to read the entire report?
No.
Why not?
Because large portions were redacted.
Agent Smith, let me get this straight. The FBI is claiming that the Russians hacked the DNC servers, but the FBI never actually saw the computer hardware nor examined it? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And the FBI never actually examined the log files or computer email or any aspect of the data from the servers? Is that correct?
That is also correct.
And you're basing your testimony on the word of counsel for the DNC, the people who provided you with a redacted copy of a draft report, not on the actual technical personnel who supposedly examined the servers?
That's correct.
Your Honor, I have a few motions I would like to make at this time. Do you hear, Frank, how ridiculous that questioning would think? That is the truth right there.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Well, let me just ask you a question, though. The redactions, because obviously it has nothing to do with the FBI, was it CrowdStrike and the DNC who were redacting things?
Yes.
Just to make it seem like there was sensitive stuff under there?
No, well, they said that they redacted the technical information they were going to be using to fix the problems that found.
Okay. It was probably the directions of how to get to Sesame Street.
123 Sesame Street.
That's it.
Listen.
Tell me how to get.
I know this was a long exercise we just did, but I really wanted people to, like, understand in a court what this will look like. Because this is, if they get to trial, because Roger Stone is not going to plea. The reason why this thread was written was because the government was forced to admit that they didn't even have a copy of the actual technical report that was written on the DNC intrusions. So this is in the Roger Stone trial. So now this guy, like, basically said, oh my God, let me talk to my FBI attorney or whoever. It's some insider guy he talked to that was just, you know, not involved in this, but gave his opinion on what the questioning would be. And they literally in court had to admit this. If Roger Stone doesn't plea, this is going to go to trial. You understand, right, Frank? I mean,
I think, see, here's the thing that gets me. Roger Stone, and I was going to cover this in tonight's show. This is unbelievable that we are getting so much farther down the road as far as attacking and touching on the root, the nerve of this entire lie through Roger Stone than we are right now from whatever I can see coming out of Julian Assange.
Yeah.
So no matter what, I am rooting this on, and I'm so happy that this man, listen, Roger, is going for it. What are you looking at, you little cat face?
I'm sorry.
No. Hold on. You hear that?
Yeah.
Lila, what do you want? Come here.
She's like, stop talking about the government that way. I'm mad at you.
What do you think, Lila? Do you think that Tracy's correct? Hold on. Let's see. Well?
Oh, okay. Sure. Now fine. She's quiet.
Now she's quiet. She's. All right. Well, she walked out of the room. She's pissed at me now.
I think she's pissed at me. I wouldn't take it personally.
All right. Go ahead.
No, but like, what I want to see too, and I've been thinking about this more and more, if it ends up, I wonder if the government will just drop the charges rather than go to trial. But outside of that, if it ends up that Julian Assange is here when the trial's going on, his attorney can call him as a witness.
Wouldn't that be amazing? You want to talk about chess? Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing as all this stuff is coming around? But then again, you know, that would have to mean, I started thinking about the actual arrest of Roger Stone, you know, how one thing can lead to the other. Was that actually orchestrated? It can't really be. I mean, who the hell would really put themselves through this kind of,
I don't know.
Either way, opportunities are presenting themselves right now. And I don't care how the hell we got to that point, but it's great. And this particular script that we read, I don't care if we spent another 5 minutes on that. It was so beautiful.
Wasn't it great?
Oh, yeah.
That thread, it will be in the description box below.
I mean, I'm retweeting it now.
Yeah, the show notes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm going to also play a clip for you really quickly before the end of the show here that's probably going to make you shudder. This is a Denver City Councilwoman Candy. I can't even pronounce her last name, but her first name's Candy. It's spelled C-D-E-B-A-C-A. Are you ready?
Yes.
Late phase capital.
Here we go.
I don't believe that our current economic system actually works. Capitalism by design is extractive. And in order to generate profit in a capitalist system, something has to be exploited. That's land, labor, or resources. And I think that we're in late phase capitalism and know it doesn't work and we've got to move into something new. And I believe in community ownership of land, labor, resources, and distribution of those resources. And so whatever that morphs into, I think, is what will serve community the best. And I'm excited to usher it in by any means necessary.
Yeah, it morphs into mass graves, you lunatic, whoever you are.
By that's any what it morphs means into. Necessary, she says.
No, that's by that, any that means necessary. Economics. That's what it comes. And they talk late phase capitalism, like it's a terminal disease. Uh-huh. This is how they talk about pregnancy now, by the way.
Yep.
And, And to say that it is the most exploitative, but then to say I advocate community ownership over what? Over everything, which means that you need to exploit more than capitalism could ever do because there is nothing left but coercion. In capitalism, in a free market exchange, at least you have people who are actually able to go out there and compete and actually barter. Or maybe be able to represent their own interests and say, I don't think that this is worth my time, my money, my labor. And you can actually engage on your own behalf to say that this is worth my time and effort or not. In communism, there is nothing but coercion, which is why, you know, capitalism, it's not perfect, but it's the best you're going to get when you finally go and you put the human element into things, which is what communists and these leftist loons are always thinking they can go and perfect. They think they can perfect humanity itself and strip it of all of its flaws. But
no, I just think that they think that they would be better with the power than other people is what I think.
It's all part of it, because once again, the ones who get to stand behind microphones like that lunatic bastard that we just listened to for a second there, those are the ones who thinks that they're going to be invited to the black tie events and they're going to be swilling champagne from long tulip stem glasses, and they're going to be the ones who say yes or no and talk with really distinct drawls and all that stuff. And everybody else is going to have to worry about showing up and cashing in their coupons for food and cheese. And that's just exactly what it is. It never works out for the people. Socialism is for the socialist, not for the people. No, socialism is for the people, not for the socialist. That's always what it comes down to.
I knew that you would be able to go on a rant about that, so I figured I would throw it in.
Where the hell was she saying that? Who was she addressing?
She was addressing I don't want to hear you again. This was Denver City Councilwoman candidate.
Of course it's Colorado.
Yeah.
Of course it's Colorado.
I got one more for you before we end up today. Teen Vogue. I don't know if you've seen this floating around today at all.
No.
Teen Vogue, the audience is between 13 and 16.
That's why I haven't seen it floating around.
Why Sex Work is Real Work is the article that they've put in their magazine today about how you should protect sex workers and how the United States is bad because they've recently introduced stronger legislation to make it harder for sex workers to advertise online.
Yeah.
And that forces them out into the community. Now, granted, it's the world's oldest profession, Frank, right?
Yep.
And we're not going to get into a moral debate about it, but I would say that advertising prostitution to 13-year-old girls is not necessarily the best use of the real estate in your magazine.
Well, they're all part of the big club, and the big club would love 13 to 16-year-old girls spreading their legs on webcams so that it can be very discreetly distributed around the internet, as we know is very prevalent these days. It's just it's awful.
It's that ties into Desmond.
Oh, God.
Who's now got a Converse ad campaign with him.
Oh, I saw that a couple weeks ago. I saw that. There's nothing about I saw him surrounded by this group of just ambiguous life forms. Nobody was more female or male than the other. They're all dressed in these really muted tones, and there's nothing about them that I don't know. It has nothing to do with sexuality. It has nothing to do with individualism. This is completely anti-human.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with
androgynous almost.
Oh, yeah. It's androgyny in the utmost. Like, I look at that and I think of Camille Paglia and what she talks about with late stage civilization. I would love to get Camille Paglia on my show one night.
I think I just saw a clip of her talking about what happens. Didn't Paul Joseph Watson have her in a video just yesterday?
He used her in the modernity video he put out.
That's
there.
What I thought. Okay.
But I have been putting all of her lectures, especially on transgenderism, on the air with me for a long time now. And we all know she was a part of those earlier phases of feminism, you know, to be able to equalize opportunities for women and to, you know, normalize opportunities. She's a lesbian herself. So to hear her diagnosing this as something that has gone completely astray is very heartwarming, although her prognosis is scary.
Really?
You know, it's the end of.
I thought you meant she had a disease or something.
No, I obviously her diagnosis, I guess, of diagnoses society right now. We're at the end of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the end times. It goes into, I heard a bunch of what she was saying. And, you know, you made a reference to that in the beginning of the show yourself. You said in the end times, good is bad, bad is good. And I will just say to you that I would argue that there are people on a different plane than that who don't believe that bad is good. Like, if we all thought good was bad and bad was good, we wouldn't be having the conversation about how that's not true. Do you understand what I'm saying? So maybe only half of the people are damned and the rest of us are going to be fine.
Maybe in a spiritual sense.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting religious about that. I just think that as far as being able, you know, some people lose a battle and they're able to go home and they're able to, pack it in for the night and feel good about their own effort. They left no stone unturned. They weren't led astray by any kind of lie. They did not. They were able to follow their conscience and actually, process information a little bit better. There are people out there who are taking the big lie. They're running with it and they're refusing to see anything else.
They're all miserable.
It's a very, very bitter thing to observe. There's no happy people out there.
No.
That are at least a part of that whole circle.
No, there really aren't any happy people. They're not happy. And that is that's almost like purgatory for them.
Yeah, well, think about Fleckus. You know, my buddy Fleckus, he goes out there. And he goes to the pride parades too. And everybody you talk to says, oh, well, this is about love and acceptance. And then you ask him about, okay, well, what do you think about Donald Trump? And they become the dragon from Sleeping Beauty.
It's crazy.
They turn into the dragon from Sleeping Beauty. They start spitting the green fire everywhere.
Oh my God, that was hysterical. There was one that was just on, and then we'll end because it's It's time already. But there was one that Millie Weaver posted this morning of people. It was this woman reporting for InfoWars with her microphone camouflage. She dressed up as like a unicorn or something, like all rainbowy with blue lipstick. And she went to the Pride Parade and she was like, impeach Donald Trump. And everyone's like, yeah. And then she's like, yeah, we want Mike Pence. And everyone's like, yeah. Oh. And then she was like, well, what do you think? We should impeach Trump, right? And the guy's like, absolutely. And she goes, okay. She's like, well, Mike Pence will be president. That'll be fantastic. And he's like, oh. And by the end of the little conversation with that guy, she had basically convinced him maybe it would be best to just wait out his presidency and see what happens and then try and vote someone else in instead of just impeaching him because you don't like him. Because the alternative in our government doesn't always necessarily work out the way you want. And I think that that's the problem, is that people never think it through to the other side. I have a video coming out that I did with Brandon, the re-education series, which I think is really funny, play on words, mm-hmm. where I did socialism from the perspective, I don't want to give it away, but I did it in a very interesting way because I don't think these people on the left think through what they're demanding if it were ever flipped on them.
Have you ever watched the On the Street content made by a man named Vladimir Jaffe.
I know the name, but I don't know the guy.
He does most of his work in New York City. I think he lives in Jersey. I almost got him on the show once. I should reach out to him again. But especially when all the Occupy movement stuff was going on in New York City and everybody was – there was such a huge socialist contingent there – he would start showing up being a person who left Soviet Russia and knows what living under that kind of established way of governance is like. He's put so many interesting things to, right onto the table for some of these idealistic bubblegum brain college freshmen that call themselves communists and that saying it's never been implemented right before, we can get it right this time. You should definitely check it out. I don't know how active he is, but the stuff that he's already done is really fantastic.
He put up a video a week ago that says, surprise, a semi-reasonable lefty daughter of U.S. dissident found by former Soviet citizen.
That's, yeah, he refers to himself as former Soviet citizen.
Cool.
Yeah, take a look at it. Because you may find some clips and stuff that you and Brandon may want to add in there. And Vladimir might be a guy for you to reach out to.
Huh. Well, thank you. You find the most obscure, interesting people.
They're out there.
They are out there. Hey, Frank.
Yes?
You've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast. Well, you've also been participating in it.
Mm-hmm.
With Frank.
Oh, well, no, my name is actually FBI agent John Smith.
I'm sorry, John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith.
With Frank, FBI agent John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith Val.
And Beans, who is really actually FBI attorney. I'm not FBI attorney. Attorney one.
Defense attorney, yes.
Defense attorney one. And you guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you Wednesday.
Later.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
In my travels, bounce around the country, I saw a lot of people stressed out. I saw a lot of people that breathing 20, 25 breaths per minute. That's a stress situation. Be aware, think about what you think about, but be aware of your breathing. The best in the world, when they want to get into a zone state, they've reduced their breathing down to 6 to 8 breaths a minute, maybe even under 10. What does that mean? Well, that means taking long inhales and taking long exhales and breathe. Stop every hour and a half, every 2 hours. You can even set your phone alarm. And when it goes off, smile and breathe. In 15 seconds, 2 breaths maximum. And when that happens, serotonin now floods into the bloodstream. you'll feel a calm come over you. With your jaw unhinged, this deep breathing, your shoulders will even relax. So that's another little tip du jour as we embark on this upcoming weekend and this next week. Lower your breathing. Relax. Get peaceful. Be calm.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.